Welcome back to the No Name Football Podcast. We've been on a little brief hiatus, but now we're back in full effect and talking your beloved Bears. We're going to have Adrian Peterson, our former teammate, Walter Payton Award winner.
The real Adrian
Peterson. The real deal AP, baby. Yeah. College Football Hall of Famer, mm-hmm. Walter Payton Award winner, two-time national champion.
One of the toughest teammates I ever had, yes, man. That guy.
By far.
Man, mentality, being a ball player. Yeah. He was an animal.
Consummate pro. Mm-hmm. He defines everything that a Chicago Bear should be, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. I'm a nobody, but in my opinion, brother. and then we'll also, you know, we hope to have Chris Williams on the mm-hmm. show, former first-round draft pick in 2008. Our former teammate will join the show as well to talk about his career. I'm sure he'll talk about the O-line situation with the Bears and what Tevin Jenkins is going through. So, you know, to start the show, we're going to talk about the Bears. Obviously, they just finished their preseason game up with the Miami Dolphins. The Bears took that game 20-13. A couple takeaways from the game, Brother O. Watching the game, rewatching it last night. You know, and obviously we didn't get to see Andy Dalton that much, but you see Justin Fields come in the game, right? Mm-hmm. And to me, it just looked like the moment wasn't too big. Obviously, he had all the pressure on him. Everybody's watching. We've been waiting in anticipation and salivating over seeing him take the football field. And I think he played well. I think he played within himself. There were some situations that the play broke down. He uses athleticism to extend the pocket. But I felt like he wasn't out there just, you know, you get some young quarterbacks who are so athletic and they just want to run. They just want to run. You know, they just want to run. But I felt like he ran when he had to. He stayed in the pocket and manipulated the pocket when he needed to. And I think he delivered some good balls to his receivers.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. He was impressive to watch. Early on, you know, the whole offense looked unsettled, right? And sometimes you'll get that with different quarterbacks just because the rhythm is totally different. When one quarterback goes out, J-Mac, like you know, the snap count changes, mm-hmm. the pace changes, the energy and the huddle changes. So everybody's kind of got to adjust to Justin Fields. And I don't think that O-line group that he was with, I don't think he's had a ton of work with them in camp. I don't know for a fact, but just that's, you could see that the rhythm wasn't really there. And it's hard to find a rhythm with obviously a young quarterback in his first game, probably the first time in a huddle, first time running those guys to the line of scrimmage, getting everything organized, not getting a play from the sideline. A lot going on there for Justin Fields, but immediately you notice his athleticism. Mm-hmm. When he takes off running, this guy is fast, man. And you can get now, J-Mac, this guy on the field and get creative with some packages, right? Like the Baltimore Ravens do down there with Lamar Jackson. I mean, that's the kind of speed it looked like he had. But like you said, also, he was looking to pass. He was setting it up, running at defenders so they would come at him, dumping it over the top. One thing I didn't like was when he was scrambling around in the end zone. I like for him to get the ball out. You know, obviously, coming out of college, a lot of people said he didn't get the ball out quickly. You saw some of that.
Yeah.
Well, you saw some of those hiccups. And obviously, in preseason, you don't know. He's not going against the ones. But I also thought early on the offense with that tight man coverage the Dolphins play, they miss Allen Robinson. Yeah. You know, you want to go to him. They're going to show you man coverage. Yeah. I'm going to Allen Robinson, although I thought Dalton missed Bird in the slot on a third down there. But I thought the running back looked good, J-Mac. Wondering what you think about Damon Williams. I know Montgomery got hurt on the first play. I think he's fine. That was scary, though. But I liked what I saw with Damon Williams when he came in the game.
Yeah, I mean, and we've been talking about him all offseason, brother. I've been high on him since he was at Kansas City. You know, we talked about it before. He was a couple plays away from being the Super Bowl MVP. You know, mm-hmm. Pat Mahomes stole that with a couple passes downfield that led to touchdowns. Otherwise, he would have been your Super Bowl MVP.
Listen, as long as Pat Mahomes is on the field, you're not going to win Super Bowl.
The quarterback's going to get the MVP. He's going to get it. But, I mean, he's a proven back, and like I stated in this past offseason when we started talking about Damian Williams, he is a back who, you know, took off last year because of COVID reasons. So now he's fresh, and he's coming into a season where he has motivation because now he's not entrusted in that starting role. Obviously, we know that job belongs to David Montgomery, but you have a backup who's capable of being a starter. So, you know, I could see this going down as, you know, obviously Montgomery should get the bulk of the carries, but, you know, Damian Williams is going to command his carries because he's a running back that can do all things. You know, he can run between the tackles, he can run out on the perimeter, but he's also effective in the passing game. And when you have a back that can do all those things, a complete back in the NFL, the Bears have a luxury of having two guys like that. And then we also got to talk about the rookie, Khalil Herbert. I think he's been doing well. He did some good things in that game as well. And, I think, going with him and Justin Fields, I touch on both of them. You know, with Justin Fields, it's a young quarterback, right? Usually young quarterbacks, they come in this league and what do they want to do? They want to showcase their arm. They want to force the ball downfield. But Justin Fields showed his maturity by checking the ball down to Khalil, when he had to. So that shows Fields' maturity, but it also shows Khalil's versatility, being able to be effective in the passing game, but also being able to run between the tackles. And that's what you want for a young back. You want him to go out there and be productive, and especially a back that was drafted in the sixth round, he has to show that the game isn't too big for me. I belong here. I can have a role in this offense. And I think the Bears are seeing that. And, I wouldn't be surprised to see him push for some playing time as well.
Yeah, and we'll have Adrian Peterson on later to talk about just how a sixth round running back can get his playing time and get on that team. And it'll be interesting to see what he has to say about that. But, also just sticking with the offense as we go on here, I think the Bears may, J-Mac, just kind of watching when their first team was on the field, taking as much as you could out of that, those limited amount of reps. Mm-hmm. I think that they see their tight ends as a strength of their team this year. And on offense, you saw some three tight end sets.
Yeah.
Jesse James, I think he was a really good addition late in the offseason there. Cole Kmet, I wouldn't recommend trying to jump over everybody, Cole, but
that's
all right.
Like, he's a head scratcher for me. Lower your shoulder, big
guy.
He's
aggressive, man. I mean, like, the guy's, he's always trying to make plays. But, sometimes you see a smaller guy, just lower your shoulder. I think he said that he saw on film the guy always taking out people's legs, but he stayed up this time. And then obviously they like Jimmy Graham's playmaking ability. So on offense, but J-Mac, we do eventually have to talk about that offensive line is a work in progress. James Daniels, who I consider their best offensive lineman when healthy, he was out, I think, with a quad injury. Fetty is still out. Their guy they considered a starting right tackle. Elijah Wilkinson played a lot at left tackle. He wasn't that, he wasn't great, J-Mac. He wasn't really bad. Not a guy. I don't think you want him as your starting left tackle out there.
Yeah.
The Bears lose Tevin Jenkins to back surgery. They've got to be disappointed up there at Halas Hall. They tried everything, right? Man. They took the MRI weeks ago. They tried all the anti-inflammatory shots. I'm not going to play doctor here. And, we all know the names, but we'll leave that to the doctors.
Right.
And then they end up having to sign Jason Peters. The last 2 years, J-Mac so-so, so-so, and he hasn't completed a season. He didn't complete the season last year. Hopefully, he has some left in the tank now because the Bears, J-Mac, their plan at tackle position and at left tackle has fallen apart.
Yeah, and it goes back to with Jenkins. I mean, they knew he had back issues, throughout the combine evaluation. He had issues at Oklahoma State last year with back issues. So they knew about this before they drafted him. And, they were hoping that he'd be able to play through this and overcome it. With the Nagy press conference the other day, he's saying he hopes that Tevin Jenkins will be back from surgery. But you know what I'm saying? That's, in my opinion, that's coach speak, because I mean, you're having back surgery, you open up somebody's back, and granted, if it's a minor surgery or whatever, I mean, you're cutting somebody open and messing with their back, especially at a high contact position, that left tackle position. So it's just unfortunate for us Bears fans. I know me and you talked about Tevin Jenkins a lot this offseason. Everybody wanted to see him get on the field, and you're missing a guy you drafted in the second round that you had entrenched to be your left tackle, and you're trying to bring along a quarterback who's potentially going to be your franchise quarterback, and now you don't have your quote unquote franchise left tackle. You're losing him to surgery, so it's a big blow. It's a big blow for us. It's a huge blow. Jason Peters is a little long in the tooth, and we'll have to see if he can come in and solidify that spot for us.
Yeah, and if he, like you're saying, J-Mac, if you have a back injury, you're resting already, right? So you're not training. You've lost some strength. Those anti-inflammatory shots, they make you weaker.
Right.
You can't really train really hard while you're taking them. So he's lost some of his conditioning already.
Oh, yeah,
right?
For sure.
So now he's going into surgery. Now, look, their last game is about little under 6 months away. Okay, so do you want to bring him back and risk his career? What kind of surgery is he actually having? I don't know. These questions we all don't have answers to. I know that it's extremely frustrating to watch the Bears go through this again at the tackle position, right? And I know Charles Leno was a lightning rod for a lot of Chicago Bears fans. I know guys who we respect, Brandon Thorne. We've had him on our podcast. See him, you know, about 17 to 20 at the left tackles in the NFL out of 32. Yes. They rank him 17 to 20. Why do you get rid of him, in my opinion, and keep Jimmy Graham? Here's something, J-Mac, that I was looking at. Jimmy Graham is making more than all the Bears' offensive tackles combined, okay? And here's my problem with that. I'm not saying that you shouldn't have tried to replace Leno. I'm saying the plan could have been better. Right. Here's my problem with that. Every year Coach Nagy has been here, he's talked about the end of the year, finding the why of why the Bears' offense is not producing the way you want them to produce. Mm-hmm. Finishing in the bottom half of the league every year, you know, not scoring enough points and not running the ball. They always say, we're going to find a why if we're not running the ball. And they always point to the offensive line, mm-hmm. right? And we have to get that position fixed. We know they fired Harry Heistand. They brought in Juan Castillo, who Juan is a very good football coach
right.
and has done some good work while there. Again, this year, after this year, they talked about running. We need to run the ball more, set things up. No, anyway, you're putting no resources into that. And then you bring a Zero. Resource in, and he has a back injury, and he's out. Look.
They played Russian roulette with it, brother.
Some people say bad luck.
No.
All I'm saying is this. If I need to fix a position, I'm going to put as much there as possible as I can. And if I have a guy in, say, Charles Leno, I'm just going to keep him until I make sure I have another guy who can play that position. If it's possible for me to do that, and it is, because all you got to do is get rid of Jimmy Graham. So all I'm saying is when you stand up on that podium
right.
and you keep telling me that fixing this position is important, eventually you have to show me by the moves you make in the offseason that you really believe the words that are coming out of your mouth.
Yeah, and the thing is, you're saying we talk about Leno, right? 93 consecutive starts. So he's a known. He's a constant at that left tackle position. So you're going to get rid of a known, right? And you're going to draft an unknown. Yeah, he fell to us in the second round, but the unknown was the back issue. You knew about that already. Mm-hmm. So you're going to bring in a guy who you don't know if he's going to play or not because of that back issue. You're going to get rid of your starting left tackle that's made 93 starts. All right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he may not have been, you know, in the top ranked in the top 10, whatever. Those are all numbers. But the one thing we do know, he was there. And I talk about this in my football program all the time, brother. We talk about the abilities that matter most. Responsibility, accountability, and dependability.
Mm-hmm.
Leno was all three of those things.
And availability.
Availability.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's tough. And now you're scrambling trying to find a guy left tackle. You now you gotta bring in, you know, Jason Peters and, you know, Elijah Wilkinson, a guy who didn't have nowhere near as many starts as Charles Leno. I don't know how many starts he has. We probably have to go look that up. But like you said, you have a constant right there, a guy who's been there for you. You have consistency. You have some type of cohesiveness on his offensive line. And we've seen even last year, I mean, the offensive line has always been shuffled around. It's shuffled around, new guy in, new guy out. How can you build some type of camaraderie knowing, you know, there's never going to be a time in which you can know what the man next to you is doing because it's always a different guy. It's always a different guy. So then how can you fix the running game? How can you be consistent in a pass game? If I don't know what the man next to me is going to do, I haven't been with him, you know, throughout the entire training camp, throughout OTAs, throughout mini camp, because there's always a new guy there.
Yeah, and like you're saying, why not, if this is the position you keep pointing to since 2018 that you guys need to fix?
Yes.
If this is the why, that you keep talking about the why and the collaborative effort, if this is what you keep coming to, why so little resources, right? So then you got to go out and sign Jason Peters. I think he's 39. And Jason looks missing, man.
Yeah.
Jason Peters is an absolute animal. And was, right?
Yeah.
He was an animal. His last 2 years, his film has been so-so.
Right.
They can just get something out of him. But obviously, this wasn't your plan. Your plan didn't work. And you know, J-Mac, it makes me think about when people in the city say, in the Bears organization, they need a football guy there mm-hmm. to help them make decisions, right? And I'm not huge on all of that. I just kind of, you just hear people say that. Those who don't know their history, they're doomed to repeat it, okay? Yeah. So what I'm thinking is, if Ted and George are there around draft time mm-hmm. and they're saying, we're thinking about trading up for this Tevin Jenkins, and it comes across your desk, there's a back issue here.
Yep.
Like someone needs to ask a question there that has been there in 2008 when the Bears took Chris Williams.
Yes.
Right. And Chris Williams had a back issue and it ended up being a problem and he needed surgery. And I'm not saying Tevin Jenkins' career is by no means done.
No, not at all.
By no means. This kid could come back. And look, he comes back. He has a 10 to 15 year career. He excels at either tackle position. This is a good draft pick. Definitely. We have to put that out there.
Definitely. It's like, I'm sorry to cut you off, brother. Just the fact that, like you're saying, it's a good draft pick, but the draft pick that you envision to be entrenched in that spot is not available.
No, again, the argument is your plan
right
at that left tackle spot. The plan, the fact that you came into the year with nobody on your roster with left tackle experience. And we've talked about earlier, right? We talked about earlier on this podcast that Alex Bars is probably your second best left tackle. Mm-hmm. When you just looked over the roster. Now we talked about too that Elijah Wilkerson, he didn't embarrass himself at all against the Dolphins. There's not a lot of starters on the field.
Right.
And here's a guy, I don't know if you want him there through the whole year. But it looks like, you know, they're taking a Hail Mary here on Jason Peters and hoping he works out because You let Charles Leno go, right? And it didn't make sense to me, J-Map. We can kill this offensive line issue. I have been since 1998 when they drafted. I have been killing this issue for a while, so I will stop kicking the dead horse. I want to move on, J-Map, to what you thought you saw. I know they had starters out, Roquan Smith, Danny Trevathan, Eddie Jackson, Gibson, a bunch of, I think Vildor started at the other cornerback position opposite Jalon Johnson.
Yeah.
But just your first impressions on the Chicago Bears defense.
Yeah, I just think they, you know, shades of Vic Fangio. I just think they played fast. You know, they played fast. You know, guys were where they were supposed to be, even though it wasn't the starters. It seemed like they were well coached. You know, obviously you have, you know, your second string guys, your third string guys, and guys who are, you know, undrafted guys, low draft picks trying to make the team. You want to go out there and put on a good show. And I think Coach Desai did a good job of making sure everybody was prepared, knowing what they had to do and knowing their responsibilities. So I just saw a defense that played fast as a whole, played physical. And, you know, I think I want to say it was Khalil Mack. He had an interview a few weeks ago. And he said, you know, Coach Desai wants to take most of the thinking out of it. He wants to simplify it. And we talked about that, too. When you're an athlete or a football player, when you're not thinking as much, you're going to play faster. You don't have to, you know, 100 things going through your head before that snap. You're going to play faster. And I think that's what we're going to see about that's what we're going to see with this defense. A defense that's going to play fast, it's going to play physical because it's going to be less thinking. They're going to know exactly what to do, and they're going to get after the quarterback on the defensive line. And, you know, that secondary is going to know what they're going to do, and they're going to, you know, hopefully go out there and play well.
Yeah. And look, as much as we talk about Ryan Pace and Coach Nagy and fixing that offensive line, when you look at this defense and the dudes they got.
Man, they got some.
Man, I mean, Tyrese Tonga was playing for Eddie Goldman. So yes. Eddie Goldman's back to this year, too.
Yes.
Although he's out right now. Hopefully his back injury isn't the same as Tevin Jenkins. But when you put that front seven on the field, if Quinn is healthy, I think he had a pressure in this past game, right? If Eddie Jackson responds to Sean Desai's scheme and in the Vic Fangio-like scheme, this defense could be scary. You know, again, you got a hole over there at left cornerback. You let Kyle Fuller go, you know, this year to the Denver Broncos. Another, do you keep Kyle Fuller or Jimmy Graham thing? Mm-hmm. But Akeem Hicks, man. I mean, Alec Ogletree.
Yeah,
he realized what Roquan realizes, right? When Akeem Hicks is on the field, those linemen aren't going to get to you.
You can run.
you can just run.
Yeah.
Right? Bilal Nichols. He's going to say, you know, you mentioned, we all know Khalil Mack is an absolute game wrecker. This defense, if they produce the takeaways, you know, my two guys, Briggs and Alex Brown, over there at NBC Chicago, they don't want me to see turnovers, so I say takeaways. if they produce the takeaways they did in 2018, this team could be dangerous, J-Mac, if they find their way to get to that end zone and put the ball in there. And it's just that, as a former center, I'll just say this. I wouldn't want to see that front seven healthy the whole year.
And you don't want to see that linebacking core either. I mean, those guys got speed. They can run and hit. Roquan, Alec Ogletree, you mentioned, Danny Trevathan. Guys that are fast, can run and hit, but they can play to run and they can cover. Those are the guys you want, you know, playing linebacker. That's today's NFL. And I think with Desai too, brother, he's made it fun. You know, you see clips of them at practice, but also on the sideline from the preseason game. You see them, they have the turnover or the takeaway basket. They got the takeaway basket. Guys are getting takeaways. They take the football. They dunk it in the basket. Guys are having fun. You know, you got to make it fun because this is a defense who has been, you know, on the field majority of the game. You know, they've been broken down. You know, they've broke because they've been on the field for a long time. They were down. So now you bring in a new defensive coordinator who has to re-energize his defense, continue to motivate this defense. And I like what he's doing with that takeaway basket, getting these guys energized, getting the young guys energized, even the old guys energized, and just letting them, you know, letting that leash loose and letting these guys go out and play fast.
Yeah, and the thing about Sean Desai, and we talked about this with Jeff Joniak, that new defensive coaching staff is something we're going to watch also too, mm-hmm. right? Like with a young player, like when people talk about, can you tell if Fields is ready to play? You almost have to wait to these young guys, the young coaches and our players, yes. J-Matt, they get on the film for 5 or 6 games. People know what they want to do. They study them. People are going to study Sean Desai. They've never seen him call a game.
Yes.
They're going to study his tendencies, and then they'll adjust to that. And can he adjust to that? Because if I would imagine this defense would come out early and look pretty darn good just because of the personnel they got. Yes. And they say Sean Desai is a very smart coach, and like you said, he's making things fun. But as that year wears on and offense coordinators start to get a feel for what Coach Desai likes to call, that's when we'll see, are you a good coordinator or not? Same thing with Justin Fields. He's got to get on that field. The coach is going to take, you know, he'll see a blitz. Mm-hmm. He won't handle it well. Right. Guess what he's going to see next week? Same damn blitz.
Run it till you stop.
Right? So these are the things that as we go on, we're all watching for. But just my initial impression, it's been my impression for a while, if that front seven, you know, lines up, or I mean, almost, they're so good and there's so much money in that front seven, you should just play base behind them. They should be that good that they're getting to the quarterback with only 4 guys.
And I can see that happening. Like you said, there's a big hole in left corner. So you've got to hide that hole until somebody steps up and solidifies that spot. And the way you hide things and make things easy on the back end of your defense is getting to the quarterback. Mm-hmm. Everybody wants to get to the quarterback. That's why you see, you know, in today's draft, so many, it's a high premium on defensive linemen, defensive end, even hybrid guys, depending on the scheme that you're running, because defensive coordinators, right? They want guys that get to the quarterback. If you have a defense that can consistently get to the quarterback, it makes everything easier. No matter what you call, we're getting pressure on that quarterback. Like I keep saying, we saw with Kansas City, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers was able to get after Mahomes to get him off of his spot. Those routes wouldn't time up like Kansas City is used to. Mahomes can't make time throws and throw the ball accurately. And what happens? They lose the Super Bowl because you had a defensive front that was getting after that quarterback.
Yeah, and look, your starting tackles are out, right, for the NFC Championship game. Bakhtiari is out. The Chiefs had 2 tackles out, and these OCs want to run the same offense. So that's up to them, J-Mac, man.
Womp, womp, womp.
But we better get to Adrian Peterson coming up. All right, I'm going to welcome in my former teammate here. First of all, my partner on this podcast, Jason McKee. He's got, you know, coaching duties at Carmel Catholic. He's a lot busier than I am, so he won't be here for this segment. But I want to introduce one of my former teammates here. Grew up in Glen, Louisiana. Went to Catholic High School near Baton Rouge, Louisiana, where he was all region and all conference. Ended up going to the University of Vanderbilt. Started for them from 2005 to 2007. Ended up being all SEC from Vanderbilt, which is very rare, in case you don't know. It's a big accomplishment for somebody who goes to Vanderbilt. And ended up, the Bears took him at the 14th pick of the draft in 2008. A guy I really enjoyed playing with, worked his butt off. Just want to welcome into our No Name Football podcast, Chris Williams. What's up, Chris?
Double G, man. Hey, it's bad you got to go back to high school stats.
Hey, I do too, man. All us offensive linemen got to go back to find our stats, man. Yeah, we don't have those rushing yards and touchdowns, and we don't have all that kind of stuff. So we need people to say when we're all conference and all state in high school, man. But Chris, tell us a little bit about what you're up to nowadays and how your family is doing.
Family's great, man. We just had our fourth kid. He's 6 weeks old. Mm-hmm. I got two boys and two girls from 10 to 6 weeks. We got a farm, raise horses and stuff, grow hemp. You know, that's it, man. We're just shooting the cruise, really. I'm helping out. I've been up at Vanderbilt. I coached high school for a few years. It was a good time, and then I stepped away from it. Just because it was high school more than anything, and that's what stuff had to get done. I had a couple businesses at the time and got out of that stuff, and I've been up at Vanderbilt a bit the last couple of days. It's been a good time. So
when you say you're up at Vanderbilt helping out, what are you doing up there, and what are you helping out with?
Just kind of hanging around the offensive line, you know, trying to just talk to them and give them a different voice. Their coach, A.J. Blodgett, we believe in a lot of the same things, so we just try to give them a different voice other than his, and another set of eyes, that's all. You know, nothing official, nothing like that, at least not yet, and just give me something to do. Just like we were talking about the other day, man, you know, I get away from football too long. I get a little stir crazy, so.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. And we were talking about that, about how we got to get back close to the game again just to get our head back on straight, head back right. It seems to straighten out everything in the world today. But when you're working with these college offensive linemen, what do you find is the biggest thing that you have to hit on with them that they have to improve? Because I know there's a lot of talk nowadays around college offensive linemen when it comes to the NFL. Are they ready? Because the NFL really isn't a developmental league anymore, right, Chris? Like when you come in now, there's not a lot of padded practices. There's not a lot of time to get ready. So people are wondering why the O-line play has dropped off. And I'm wondering from your point of view, what do you find in that college when you go to Vanderbilt? What do you find that you have to work on with these offensive linemen?
Man, you know, it's just the consistency and that attention to detail. And then just the ability to be a prick, man, and finish guys, you know, as well as I do. Offensive line play, a lot of times this comes down to who wants it more. I mean, your feet are going to be messed up. Your hands are going to miss a lot. But if you want it more than that guy does, unless he's some kind of freak of nature, which in college you don't see a ton of. In professional football, everybody's really, really good. But in college, I mean, I'm telling them, like, if you five guys get together, play together, and play hard, you can block anybody down here. Mm-hmm. You might run across one or two guys that are just kind of nuts, but. I mean, you just get together, double guys, finish guys, you got a shot. But you know, everybody's cute now and got Twitter accounts and that kind of stuff. And it's just tough. And then, like you said, they're no tool days. They can't even pass back-to-back days, time limits. So trying to convince them, like, hey, you're doing a walkthrough every night at 8 o'clock, right? Okay, well, these walkthrough reps, pitch your doubles, work your footwork, work your sets, pitch your hands, you know. They just don't get that kind of stuff. And at 19 years old, I wouldn't have got it either. I'd be like, man, screw you.
So I was reading now, when you got to Vanderbilt, is it true, some of the stuff you find online, I don't know how true it is, but this is one interesting thing about doing the podcast is you get to study your former teammates, but is it true you got to Vanderbilt at around 235 to 240 pounds? And if that is true, how did you bulk up to put your weight on, and what was your development like through your years at Vanderbilt?
I was like, I probably played my senior year about 260. Mm-hmm. And then I did track and baseball and stuff. So I got that like 245 that summer. And I reported, I think I was 248 when I reported. And, you know, our DB coach at the time, Jamie Bryant, was like, hey, man, you want to gain some weight? You know, drink Budweiser. And so I was like, okay, you know, you start drinking Budweiser and protein and Listerine. I'm dead ass serious.
I was looking for some good advice for the kids, but these are for college kids, right? Like my son's in Illinois, so hey, Josh, man, if you want to have a few Budweiser to keep you awake,
not today. There's too much good stuff out there. Now this is 2003. But what happened was, I gained probably 50 pounds. I think I gained 40, 50 pounds that first year. But it was, it was sloppy, it was just a golly. I ended up getting up to about 290, 295 and then started kind of reshaping through the process and got in the weight room. And because when I got to Miami, I was doing I couldn't even do the 225 test. I mean, I could do like 225, like maybe twice. So my strength coach bumped me out like the 185 test and receivers and all this kind of stuff. Like I was, we just ripped and ran in high school. The weight wasn't a big deal. So
the Budweiser was the key. But listen, when you talk about you have to reshape yourself and the process, take us through that. Take us through the fact that you get to college at 248 and all of a sudden you work your way to a first round pick at Vanderbilt, which we know how rare that is, right? We know how rare it is to be all SEC. You have to, obviously, you found something, you put in a bunch of work. Take us a little bit through how your mindset changed and exactly what was the process that got you to being the first round pick of the Chicago Bears in 2008.
I like to compete and, at that point, I was on, I'm still running scouts at offensive line at 248 pounds, 250 pounds. So, I'm fighting my ass off, but, I'm getting tossed around a bit because I'm 250. I mean, it's Vanderbilt. We still got guys, though. So these guys playing SEC, they're seniors. They're 23 years old. So I'm having a tough time in scout team. So it's like, in order to get to where I need to compete, because at that point, I mean, I'm a true freshman. I can't even see drafted. I don't even know if I'm going to get on the field at this point, So it's like that. And then, we did the power hour. We would lift at 5 in the mornings and all this kind of stuff. So, and I just bought in everything they were telling me. I just, actually, my strength coach from college, John Sis, we're still really good friends. That's what I trained with before the draft and everything. And it's just like, I just bought in. I just was like, hell, I don't know any different. So I was never really a big protein or supplement guy, but we just trained a bunch, man. And I had, the reason they recruited me was because, my dad's like 6'4", 270. So they saw his frame and they're like, well, I'll be able to carry a weight. They just had to get it on me. So once I started eating and training, heavy, it just came on really.
Man, I love those kind of stories, man. Is that work that you got to put in and to get all SEC and 14th pick of the draft, man. I mean, you put in that work and then, you ended up team captain. So obviously you were a team leader there at Vanderbilt. And then, you get drafted to Chicago Bears and was one of the reason I called you and we talked about earlier is that, they took this, Tevin Jenkins out of Oklahoma State and as soon as I read he had back surgery, I thought of you immediately because that first year, in 2008, you came in, you ended up having to get back surgery. And just kind of, take us through that process, kind of when you knew you had a back problem and it was a serious problem and when you knew you had to get surgery. And what's that like mentally for you to come back from?
Oh, man, that was... I went through all the combine stuff and recheck. I had to actually call me back for rechecks, but I never knew what it was for. Mm-hmm. And so I did combine, did rechecks. And then come to find out, my agent told me, years later, there was a chance I could have failed on draft day. He was like, something come out by my back, whatever. And, some teams were pulling me off of their board. And so I knew nothing about it, cause my back, through college, other than being tight at times and, stuff like that, it was never like, I never was late. I never missed any games, was late, nothing like that. So then I get to camp, we go through main camp and all this kind of stuff. Then I get to camp and I mean, I believe I heard it. We were getting ready for 9-on-7. And I just, you know, I was going out of my stance and they went. And it's like, boop. And then I got this funny walk and stuff going on. And, you know, being in Chicago, I think it's 20,000 people at practice that day or something like that, you know? Mm-hmm. So you're trying to, like, you know, not only I'm trying to get back on the field because I got teammates there. They're drafting the first rounder for a reason, so they're expecting you to contribute in some form or fashion and probably start. And then on top of that, you got these guys that draft you, the job's on the line. So, you know, it's a pressure cooker out there. I mean, you know how it was. They tried to, you know, the steroid pack, you try everything, you throw everything at it, nothing happens, and then it's like all of a sudden, like, you got to have surgery. I didn't even move out of my dorm room in Bourbon Lake and went to the city, had the surgery, and then, you know, I did was back doing goal line and field goal and short yardage and stuff by the end of the season, but I wasn't back, you know, feeling like myself for about a year. And it was difficult, man. It was a shock to my confidence. It was a shock. I mean, you go from, and then at that point, I don't even realize how vicious of a media market Chicago could be. Mm-hmm. I'm from Glen, Louisiana. I played at Vanderbilt. I ain't never seen this kind of media coverage before, you know? And it's like, I'm going from, hey, this guy's going to be our next booking tackle for 10 years, to, oh, he's damaged goods, you know? And then from that point on, you're like, you're trying to, you know, it's almost like, or at least you feel like they're trying to run you out of town. You know, it's like, this is a mistake. And then you got the pressure from, like I say, coach's ass on the line, GM, everybody. So you're feeling the weight of all that, like you letting people down and all this kind of stuff, but just got to get back to work, really. And then if you come back, put good film on tape, you'll be fine, you know? Because the reality is, everybody gets hurt eventually for something, so. Mm-hmm.
So take us through when you say they threw everything at it, and we both know we don't know what Tevin Jenkins had. Tell us a little bit about what you had, what maybe the MRI showed, and what the doctor went in there and actually fixed. And when you say they threw everything at you, because I think a lot of people just want to get an understanding for what Tevin Jenkins is going through and what actually the process was for him to get to this surgery.
Well, I mean, at this point, I don't know what Tevin's got. I mean, most back injuries are...
Yeah, what you went through is good, yeah.
But me, it was, you know, I had bulging disc at 4 or 5, I think, at the time. So they... And then I got a condition called stenosis, too, which is a narrow than normal spinal column or whatever. So they're saying... I remember talking to Dr. Merkovich. He's like, I've seen worse, that's worse backs than yours on the team, but because of your spinal column, you know, it puts the pressure on the nerves, and the nerves is what, you know, a lot of the issues show up. So they're doing the the steroid stuff. They're trying to get the inflammation out and injections and all this kind of stuff, and nothing's putting inflammation. So then you go in and do just a microdiscectomy. I mean, it was like a 3-inch incision, but they go in and they just cut that piece of disc off. It closes right back up, and you got to heal up and all that kind of stuff. And it takes about, I think the quickest, at that time, it was like 8 weeks. But I think they're doing it through scopes and stuff now. So it may be faster than that, but getting back, like, as a normal person and getting back as a lineman is two different things too. So,
if you had any advice that you would give to Tevin Jenkins to make sure, like, look, Tevin, I mean, I know people want to get you back. Like you're saying, I mean, Ryan Pace, Coach Nagy, they're going to push him because can you get back this year just so it looks a little better for us? You and Tevin Jenkins, C-Dub, in a room, what do you tell him to do what's best for him?
Well, I would tell him to do what's best for him. I mean, you got teammates. I mean, it's all about, you know, you don't want your teammates down, no doubt. And you don't want your coaches and them down either. But at the end of the day, no film's better than bad film. Mm-hmm. So if you feel great, you come back 8 weeks, you feel great, you look like Tevin Jenkins that they drafted, go out there and, you know, roll somebody. But if you're going to go out there and limp, make around, like, just to make them save face, that ain't helping you none either. You know, so if you feel good, do what you got to do. If you don't let them push you, because that's your DNA you're putting on tape. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. if whether or not Coach Nagy them and Pacing them stay, it ain't got nothing to do. I mean, it ain't going to hinge on whether or not, or it'll be his fault one way or the other. You can't even really worry about that. You got to, you know, do what's best for your career at that point. And he's too young of a player to go out there. I mean, I don't think there'll be any risk for necessarily permanent damage, but, you know, you could screw up his confidence, or he can go out there and put bad stuff on tape and mess him up. Like, it sucks because that injury happens, you know, a couple weeks later, or a month later, and he's put something on tape that people could see, then you wouldn't even be as worried, you know?
Mm-hmm. So when you came back, you had that back injury, and you know, let us know what the symptoms were, but you had that surgery. What was the hardest thing you thought, strength-wise, mobility-wise, conditioning-wise, that you had to try and get back, the thing you had to work the hardest for? What is Tevin Jenkins looking at? And again, I don't want to speak like he has the exact same thing, but for someone with a back injury, what is he looking at? What thing does he have to work on the most to get back so he can actually get on the field and perform at a high level? Because in my opinion, man, like you're saying, if this kid, look, even with his back injury, if he comes back and just and plays high level football for 10 years, that's a successful career. So what's the number one thing that you think after a back injury, you have to get back, you have to be working on, and you're looking at, you're saying, okay, when this is back, man, I'm ready to go again.
Well, I think he'll get strong again. Mm-hmm. There's no doubt about that. You know, you'll get the strength back. There's other ways to train your legs, you know, and get that type of strength. The thing that you lose, depending on where the disc injury is you lose the flexibility. So I haven't seen a ton of film with him, so I don't know how he plays. But if you're a leveraged guy, you play low, and you play with good bend, then you're going to lose some of that. You're going to lose that ability to dig out that, you know, that last little bit, like you get on squats, that digging guys out, that last little bit of a sit that you got, you're going to lose some of that. Mm-hmm. And depending on how player he is, that could affect him. If you're a guy that's, I mean, he's just strong as an eye up top, kind of like if you're Andrew Whitworth and you don't bend your knees anyway, you just clamp the guys up. Then,
hey, Andrew's like 51, man. So they left out.
That's what I'm saying. Like, playing high level, you know, it's like, but it's like if you're a knee bend guy, got a lot of hip roll, that kind of stuff, that stuff's going to take a while because it's that you lose some of that, you're going to lose some flexibility in your lower and mid back, you'll lose the spinal curvature. Possibly, this is a lot of moving parts, but the strength will come. Mm-hmm. Now, the rest of it, you know, you just don't know.
Well, see, Dub, man, I'm going to leave it with this. I'm going to let you, and I know you went through some of it already, but you're in a room with Tevin Jenkins. It's just you and him. And you're going to give a young lineman who's going through some of what you went through. It may not be exactly the same, but it's a lot. What is the main advice that you're going to give this guy to make sure that this guy has a successful NFL career?
The main advice would be, kind of like I said before, just like, hey, man, at this stage, you know, no film's better than good film. I know you want to get out there and play. Who doesn't, you know, you got a lot to prove. You got your family on your back, everybody, you know, stuff like that. But at the end of the day, you got to be the best player you can be to get back on the field. Coach Nagy's already put the pressure on him. He's already said he's going to be back this year. You know, that's subtle. All that stuff is subtle. I know it's in the back of his mind. He wants to get back as quickly as possible. But at the same time, you want to be the player that you are able to be. Mm-hmm. And in my opinion, that injury for offensive linemen is about, well, my injury was like a year injury. I don't know what his is, but I would just tell him, take his time. He's young. You're a rookie, man. If you're a rookie, second round, first round pick, high second round, something like that.
Mm-hmm. Third round pick in the draft, second round pick. Yep.
Yeah. So you're a high pick, top 40 pick in the draft. You got some time, man. Like, get yourself healthy. Like you said, you go on and you play 10 years at a high level, nobody's going to care. Nobody's going to remember your back surgery. You come back, you dink and dunk it, or you mess something else up, now you're going to be chasing it for the rest of your career. So,
Well, C-Dub, man, ended up with a 7-year NFL career, great career at Vanderbilt. I just wanted to thank you for coming on our podcast. You know already how I feel about you as a teammate. I know you worked your ass off. I just want to thank you for coming on, man. I think your perspective on this situation and your knowledge is invaluable.
Well, man, I appreciate you having me. I wanted to do some – I had a bunch, man. I had a bunch of other crew stories. I think I can tell more stories about
listen,
anybody in the world.
Listen, if J-Mac was on, he'd ask you to tell. And you notice I didn't ask one time. I didn't ask one time for you to tell a story because J-Mac loves when people tell stories about me. He loves to tell the stories too. I just keep telling people. I don't remember any of that.
I worked from 245 to 315, whatever, at Vanderbilt. And then I got to the pros and I learned how to work again. And this guy and Roberto Garza. They taught me how to work at a different level, and then that's how I ended up playing 7 years. So I appreciate that. You know that. So I appreciate you having me on, too.
You know that, man. Respect goes both ways. I appreciate it, C-Dub. The best way to celebrate winning plays and touchdown is with Tequila Embajador. That's my way of celebrating. If you want to make the right play call, go online and order your bottle of Tequila Embajador at www.embajadortequila.com/buy-online-html and enter the discount code NONAMEPOD and receive your 10% discount on each bottle purchase or 50% off with a purchase of 2 bottles. Tequila Embajador. Where every sip is made to comfort the soul.
Welcome back to the No Name Podcast. And as promised, we got a special guest for you guys, a guy who me and Brother O played with for a long time. You know, a guy who meant a lot to our team, Brother O, played special teams, came in at running back and did his thing, was very productive throughout his entire career. A guy who is in the College Football Hall of Fame. He was inducted in 2017, Brother O. He is a 2-time 1AA national champion. He also won the Walter Payton Award. And here's one of the stats that really impresses me about AP's career. In 57 career college games, Brother O, he ran for 9,145 yards and 111 touchdowns. 6-round draft pick of your Chicago Bears. Our brother, our friend, great teammate, one of my favorite people in the world, the real deal, Adrian Peterson. AP, how you doing, my man?
I'm doing great, man. How you guys doing, man?
Doing good, AP, man. We just want to thank you for joining us. J-Mac just went through all your stats while I was studying for this podcast. I can't say I was amazed, AP, about those stats because we know we played with him, man. Yep. And AP, you were a monster, one of the best, a consummate teammate, a pro's pro. I just want to ask you first to kick this segment off. What are you up to now and how's the family doing?
Everyone is good. I'm here now back at Georgia Southern as the Director of Student Athlete Development.
Looking at, you know, you being a 6-round pick at the Chicago Bears, you know, the Bears have a young running back, Khalil Herbert, was a 6-round pick who's been turning heads in camp. Talk about some of the obstacles that you face and the challenge you face coming into your first training camp with the Bears as a rookie.
Hey, you know what? It was a little bit similar to my whole career. I'm gonna just you know, go back a little bit. Coming in as a high school player, you know, my sophomore year I didn't start our first game, and then finally got an opportunity, and then we went on a 14-game winning streak and won state championship. And then I also came to Georgia Southern at the same thing. You know, figured I'd play as a freshman, you know, in some capacity. That didn't happen. I redshirted. Started my following year, and then capped off an amazing college career. So I'm just all about opportunity, man, and seasoning. You can complain about getting reps here or there, but and you know, when your numbers call, man, it's all about showing up.
Mm-hmm. AP, I want to the one game that really, when I was playing with you, sticks out in my mind was when we were playing the San Francisco 49ers in 2005. I think the wind gusts were 47 miles per hour that day. Thomas Jones, I think he was out that game. Cedric Benson gets hurt. Nobody flinched in that huddle because we knew that you were coming in and you were perfect for that kind of game. I don't really ever remember one guy bringing you down. I know it always took a few guys to bring you down. When you were in the huddle, I knew we were ready for some hard-nosed football. And I just want to take you back. Like you just said, in high school, I think it's Alachua, Georgia, or Alachua. I don't know which one it is. You can correct me.
Alachua.
Alachua. I got you. Okay, Alachua.
Yes, sir.
And just where did you develop the mentality you had running that football, the way you approached the game? What instilled that in you? Because I know your older brother, Mike Peterson, I know he played in the NFL also. So two guys from the same place, both tough, hard-nosed football. I know something there in that culture was producing ball players like you guys.
Oh, yeah. I'm with my dad. Growing up, and, you know, your dad, they can always see a little bit something in you that you don't see. And, you know, as a young kid, he told me my first year, one guy shouldn't bring you down. And amazingly, man, that stuck with me. And that's how I kind of approach the game. And then as you get older, you kind of apply that in your life. Whatever obstacle it is, man, you can run over it, hop over it. But it doesn't stop you, and I just carried that on throughout, and it just stuck with me.
AP, you know, coaching high school football now and being around a lot of these young athletes nowadays, a lot of them want things handed to them. You know, they don't want to work. They want to complain when they're not starting, but then they don't want to put in the work. Now, a lot of people don't realize this about you, AP. One, you know, me being in that meeting room with you on a daily basis and at practice, you know, you never complained that you wasn't the starter. Not once have I ever heard you complain about you not being the starter, even though you could have been a starter on almost more than half the teams in the NFL. You went out there on special teams every game, and you were always one of the top three guys in terms of special teams points week in and week out. You never complained. You just put your hard hat on, and you went out there and did your job. What advice can you give these young athletes in today's game, you know, that can help prolong their career or some of the athletes that may aspire to go on and play college football? What advice can you give those guys?
I mean, it's great, you know, that you asked me that. I was actually just speaking with one of my college athletes here, and I told him a little story, you know, when I became second on the depth chart, and told, you know, our special team coach told, he took me off all of the special teams as one. And I think the first week I might have had 15 plays on offense, and then the second week I might have had 10 plays on offense. And I've seen the guys out on the special team balling and having fun. And I went to Toe week three. I said, hey, Toe, load me back up on all the ones, man. And I handle the conditioning part, you know, whether it's coming in early or staying late. I figure out a way, but I couldn't just get 15 reps on offense and see my guys out on special teams having fun. So, you know, wherever you can find an opportunity, man, to make plays, do it. If that means coming in early and hopping on the treadmill, or either staying late and doing some mile sprint, you know, find a way to get on the field. Because another thing I looked at, if I'm not playing much on offense and I'm not playing on special teams, at the year's end, guess what they're going to say, man? We can kind of do without 29. And I never wanted to be in that boat of thinking they can do without 29. So always trying to make plays.
And now when you're talking about staying ready, AP, I always noticed that when you came to camp or you came into the season, that you were in top physical shape and you were ready for whatever role the Chicago Bears, or, you know, even when you're at Georgia Southern, wherever you were ready for whatever they needed you to do. Talk to us a little bit about off-season preparation and the way you would stay and get ready for a football season.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, again, man, I'm always talking to my son or to other to college guys on our team here now. And as a young person, which we were many years ago, you should never have to get in shape. You should stay in shape year round. And as a high school student, man, I played football, played basketball, track, and then spring football, and then AAU basketball throughout the summer. So there was never a time that I had to get in shape, because I always stayed in shape. And that's how I tried to train myself, even in college. In the spring, we would do our stuff, you know, and then I would go to do a little extra. I mean, even if it was just a little mile run here or there. And even NFL, you know, during the off season, you know, and meet the season over with, I would always continue staying active. And even now, man, I got up this morning and ran my miles, this morning. So I say now that I'm older, man, it's just an active lifestyle. Mm-hmm. Active lifestyle, man. It's always staying active, staying moving, keeping those muscles ready to react.
Yeah, AP, I'm looking at, you know, listening to what you're saying, and I'm looking across at Brother O. I mean, you guys look like you guys can still play. I mean, you guys are in top-notch shape. I mean, every time I come to Ola's gym, he's working out, and you always posting on social media working out. And, you know, I try to get mine in, but, you know, right now I'm borderline looking like a busted can of biscuits right now. So
AP, I'll take a nice, easy walk, but I don't want anyone to hit me. Don't even flinch at me. You know what I mean?
Right,
I don't want any kind of contact. I just talk tough now.
Yeah, I just like cookies too much. That's my excuse, man.
Hey, a guy asked me the other day, he said, man, you think you got a little something in you? I said, man, I can run a screen. I can jump on out of bounds.
Hug that sideline, AP. That sideline.
I'm going to hug it. But that A gap, nah, I'm good. I'm good, man. I enjoy it while I laugh it. But them young guys now, man, you know, having an amazing time out there flying around.
AP, so, you know, we talked about all your accolades and accomplishments when we first brought you on. One thing I don't think people realize is what you do in the community. You know, you do a lot in the community, especially with kids, training kids, mentoring the kids as well. But a lot of people don't know that you're also an author, and you wrote a book called Don't Diss My Abilities. Can you tell the listeners about your book and where they may find it?
Yeah, and as you mentioned, doing a lot in the community. And again, that came back, mom and dad. My dad coached in our rec department for about 35 years, football and basketball. My mom was team mom. And actually our street that we grew up on was named after them, Peterson Place. And it didn't have anything to do with my success or Mike's success. It was the time that my mom and dad gave back, to the city of Alachua. And as you mentioned, my our book, you can purchase it off my website, which is adrianpeterson3.com. And I'm actually here picking up some. I'm going down to do a speaking event a little bit at this evening. So always staying busy, man. And as I always say, man, the kids are our future. And you know, we have to lug on them, you know, give them words of wisdom and grow with them.
Mm-hmm. I always have a few words of wisdom for my kids, AP.
Hey, like you always used to say, oh, truth hurts,
man. They'll be back later. But AP, just tell us a little bit about what your kids are into now and the sports they're playing and how you're helping them out.
Yeah, so my son Aiden, man, he does everything, football, basketball, baseball, and track. And I'm honest with him, man, you know, because I don't want to, and I tell him, man, I'm not the dumbest shortcut you. You know, if you want to be good, this is what you want to do. If you want to be great, this is what you have to do. And I constantly remind them, and my girls do track, basketball, and softball, and soccer. And you know, I remind them, at any time you want dad to stop training you, just let me know, and I will sit down and shut up. but they love to work, man, so, you know, it'll go to like a week or two, and I just see, you know, how their mental is, and the little ones will come up to me and say, hey, Dad, you know we haven't worked out in about 2 weeks, right? So, you know, hearing that is all great to hear.
AP, I want to talk to you about, you know, the Bears having, you know, such a rich tradition of running backs here in Chicago. I mean, we know the names, the Walter Paytons, you go down the list, Neil Anderson, you know, Matt Forte, Thomas Jones, A-Train, Anthony Thomas, yourself. Talk about, you know, the new upcoming running back, David Montgomery. Talk about what you see in his game and, you know, what you think the future holds for him.
I like him. I think he's a back who wants and needs touches to get in that rhythm, to lean on the linebacker, see how they're hitting, and going off that. And as a back, man, you always want carries, and especially if you can show that you can handle that.
AP, man, the Bears had 3 6-round picks this year. Daz Newsome, Khalil Herbert, who J-Mac mentioned earlier, and Thomas Graham. And I know you touched on it a little bit earlier, but just go a little more into depth about what these guys should be doing and what they should be thinking about every day while they're trying to make this football team, especially now. They don't have a lot of padded practices anymore. There's not a lot of developing going on, and there's only 3 preseason games. So if you want to bring yourself to the forefront, AP, I just want to give you one more chance to touch on that, because I think it's great advice for these young players.
It's tough now. It's tough. Even our guys in camp now, man. I say, man, I don't know how I would have shown myself without padded practices. Because it's different. It's different, man. And, you know, some guys are real, real good and short, you know, and some guys are great and shoulder pads and helmets. So I think special teams is one, and you know, you got to be a force on that. And then, you know, opportunities that you get, man, you have to maximize. It may be 10 carries, it may be 5, but you have to show something with each touch, each carry, each catch.
AP, I know on our last show, me and Brother O talked about some of our favorite training camp memories, and I wanted you to go back in the day a little bit. Talk about, you know, a couple of your favorite training camp, you know, memories.
Oh, man. Can I mention the cookout?
That was a good time, man.
We talked about it. People don't believe us, though, when you talk about it. They don't believe it.
The tiki torches, the bags,
the roasted pigs.
But that just showed, man, and I hit coach. He preached about it too, man, of having a player led team. You know, that speaks volume. You know, having guys, you know, that can leave football on the field, go hang out and have a good time, and then come back the next day ready to put in work for what we were in camp for 2 weeks, then 2 or 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
That just showed, you know, the difference of a player-led team and a coach-led team.
Yeah, AP, and speaking of that, you know, the memories and stuff like that, I posted on my social media today on Instagram a picture of all of us back at Soldier Field. And I put, you know, I miss everybody. And I'm just going to put it out there now. I know Brother O's going to be mad at me because he's not in the picture. He's going to say something.
Well, I was just wondering if you had any white teammates.
See what I mean? I knew it. Black was in the picture.
Oh, I got you.
Black was in there. And right. I think Pat was in there,
you
too.
You know what they say? If you can name one.
I named two, so we're good. Hey, man. Hey, I knew you was going to say that. Hey, but no, thanks for your time, AP. It was obviously for me and Brother O, it was a great opportunity to be your teammate. You were the consummate pro on a daily basis. And, you know, that's why we all have this relationship that we have till this day. Wish you nothing but success in the future, man. And everybody, all the listeners, make sure you go out there and get Adrian's book. It's a great read. It's a lot of information. Make sure you get his book. So, AP, thanks for your time, brother. And wish you nothing but the best.
I enjoy it, man. Appreciate it. Anytime, man. Y'all have a good one.
Thanks, AP.
You too, brother.
All right, bro. Y'all good.
All right, J-Mag, man, that's going to do it for today's show. As always, you know, share our podcast with your friends, your families, your neighbors, anybody who likes football. Also, you can subscribe to our podcast if you want. Give us a review, good or bad. You can give us a star, but try to give us 5 stars if you can. And you know, you've been listening to the No Name Podcast. Thanks for hanging out, and we'll see you next time. Mahalo.